Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's Casterbridge podcast. This week on the podcast, Vervoids are one of the things we'll be talking about as we ask the question, are Pip and Jane Baker really all that bad? Responsible, and I use the word with precision, for some of Doctor Who's less popular moments, the writing duo of Pip and his wife Jane Baker have been roundly criticised, derided, hated. I don't know if they've ever had hate mail. I would hope they haven't had hate mail, because I think that's taking things a bit too far. But they've been largely considered to be the manufacturers of some of Doctor Who's worst episodes. Time and the Rani is a particular, I was going to say favourite. It's not a favourite, it's the antithesis of favourites.
Lauded, derided.
Yes, in my own head. It is the low bar of Doctor Who for me, to which I compare other lowly, poorly written episodes.
Yep.
They're also responsible for Mark of the Rani, the not altogether all that bad, but still with pretty poor dialogue, Terror of the Vervoids from the Trial of the Time Lord season, and also the concluding The Ultimate Foe episode from the Trial of the Time Lord. Since those four stories have aired, they've never been invited back. Although, as we've recently found out, they had quite an extensive back catalogue of scripts for TV prior to Doctor Who. So you can see why they were brought on board. Let's start with a very simple question. Are they unfairly derided, Brian?
Oh, thank you so much. Are they? I know they get a lot of flack over the years, and I really, I think you guys both heard me before we started this. I was surprised to see that they had only done the four stories for what they get a lot of flack for. Perhaps since it is only the four stories, I think they may just be unfairly accused, because I remember liking Mark of the Rani. I remember, like you said, Terror of the Vervoids was not the worst. It was an enjoyable story. For me, Time in the Rani is always a tough one, because when I first saw the episode, it was when I was sitting there with my VHS recorder taping them off of PBS, and my VCR had an issue. It kept stopping on its own, so I had to keep hitting record. So trying to rewatch Time in the Rani. Okay, first of all, trying to rewatch Time in the Rani, period. Most people seem to have issues with. Trying to rewatch my copy, where, I don't know, every 4 or 5 minutes it would stop, or 10 seconds it would stop, and I had to keep starting. I mean, it made no sense whatsoever.
That sounds quite good to me. I think I had a copy of Time in the Rani, it would need breaks in it.
Do you know what, the funny thing is when I used to just... I got used to them, okay, because I would watch it that way. Like, as insane as I am, it was new Doctor Who to me, and I would watch it that way. So I got used to those little odd cuts and edits. And then when I did watch the original one and the uncut one, and found that it still kind of made not quite as much sense, I decided to continue watching my old edited one. Worked better for me. In fairness, I don't think that they deserve the hits that they get.
And you, James?
I think... Well, it's one of those sort of things, isn't it? It's always nice to lambast and pick on and have a good sneer at in private, or as a passing regular feature joke on this podcast, which in itself is probably a regular feature joke in itself, but... Time in the Rani, I don't know who you really blame, to be fair. I mean, Time in the Rani is... I'm actually going to go so far again and probably swear for the second time on this podcast that I've done so. It's a shit concept. Goodness, mate. And it should have been pulled from its start. Now, who do you really blame that? I mean, as a freelancer, if I give a piece of work over to my client and the client turns around and says, okay, that's fine, and I know it's not that good, whose fault is that? If they turn around and say, you need to do this, and I have to touch it up, Time in the Rani is just a very mediocre Who in its ideas. The idea is it's a loose, silly concept, which is a sort of thing you'd imagine in a children's story, not in a family TV show. And I think, to be fair, that is the story which really kills them. Because as Ryan said, Mark of the Rani isn't actually that bad. In fact, I'd go so far to say it's got some good stuff in it. And the Rani in that episode, as we were talking ourselves the other week, weren't we, Christian, is actually not that bad a character.
No, indeed.
You know, there are some interesting aspects to her. In fact, in a way, if you were to kill off the Master at that point, she would have been a good person to take over. And again, Terror of the Vervoids is one of the few Conan Bakers I actually like as well. So again, it's nothing mind-blowing, but as a kid it scared me rotten with the half the hybrid Vervoid and the darts in the hands, which I, you know, hand palms being very sensitive areas, is a very nice little horror technique. So they did do some good, and Ultimate Foes, I think we'll probably get to, is probably a difficult one to actually justify. But Time and the Rani is bad, I think it is. I know people say, oh, it's just a special effects. No, it's not. It's bad. And it's not the Tetraps. They're bearable. It is just bad. I mean, the whole idea of, you know, getting these minds together for this super brain is just annoying.
Well, Wanda Ventum looks embarrassed, and she's been in some utter shit over the years.
Shit again. We're really on a roll this time. and then you've got this terrible dialogue as well throughout it, which is stilted and artificial. McCoy is obviously struggling. The script isn't helping, which, to be fair to them, will be something which would have been characterised for them. You know, this whole mixed metaphoring rubbish that he keeps doing. And he looks uncomfortable as ever. And then the whole panto aspect of her dressing up as Mel is just, it is just insulting to the whole thing of what Doctor Who has tried to be. It's tried to be intelligent, groundbreaking, and engaging television for young audiences and families. There's nothing engaging in there. So it is a really, really, really bad episode. But again, as I say, who do you really blame for that? I mean, in the end, you've got to blame the person who signed it off and said, yeah, this is going to be the premiere for my new season. And so, again, I don't know.
Is it more... Does it come back to that egg that I raised a few podcasts ago about the whole... You know, the whole everyone's responsible ultimately for success, or everyone's responsible for a failure. Yeah. And you know, you've got the writers; they've been commissioned based on a pitch, and you've got the director Andrew Morgan, who is, you know, once the producer and the script editor signed it off, and I would imagine the script editor didn't have all that much knowledge about it before he came into the job. The director is the one who's there stealing everyone, employing everyone, making, you know, getting everyone, pulling all the people together that he's going to work with, and briefing them and telling them. Now, if the director's not inspired by the script, then none of the actors are going to be inspired by the script, are they?
No, but then I would still say you go back one step further to actually commissioning the story in the first place before you get to the director. Mm-hmm. And say, and again, you can, again, as you say, you can take this, and rather than pinning it on one person, you look at a wider tapestry. Doctor Who had just been neutered once a season ago for 18 months. And then post that season, there'd been horrific issues at the end of it. And, you know, does Time of the Rani feel nothing else but a very, very, very safe, scared, to really push its boundaries, Doctor Who, is if it doesn't know where to go anymore, because it's been castrated, which for a man, being castrated once is hard enough. Twice is surprising. And so maybe that is position that they're in as well, that they want to do. But anyway, however you want to spin it, it is rubbish, isn't it? And I suppose, unfortunately for writers, is that they tend to take the bullet in the head. But is that also because the ultimate foe? Should we talk? What about you, Christian? I mean, do you think, as a general whole envelope of Pip and Jane Baker, are they unfairly?
I think I would largely agree. I think, thanks to Time and the Rani, their legacy, as it is considerably devalued.
Yes.
Without that, and I think you can excuse The Ultimate Foe because it is at least watchable, even though it doesn't end in the greatest of manners. I think, you know, the first three set of scripts that they did, we could probably get away with and put them alongside, Brian Hales. I don't know, just someone who's responsible for creating a monster, I suppose. You know, maybe, you know, I'm
I'm not comparing them with Brian Hales. I'm just, you know, putting them in that sort of draw of Doctor Who scriptwriters. But when it comes to adding in Time of the Rani, then it's, you know, it all falls away for them, I think. Now, I mentioned this on Twitter a few days ago, and basically I posed the question, are Pip and Jane Baker unfairly ostracized by Doctor Who fans, or were Mark of the Rani and Time of the Rani really that bad? You know, basically summarizing the situation. And, you know, indeed, it was this conversation that was inspiration for this week's podcast. Almost instantly, I was replied to by someone called Cockney Scouser, which is sounds like an identity crisis if ever I heard one. Pip and Jane wrote utter shite Doctor Who with poor production values, and I don't wish to watch their episodes again. We were also, I'm pleased to say, graced by the presence of writer J.R. Southall, who said the former Pip and Jane wrote stories you couldn't follow that didn't rely on violence to paper over the cracks. They also managed to pull off an impossible job with Trial 14 on very little time and improve the original ending no end. Ian McArdle, what about their catharsis of spurious morality? Their contribution to Doctor Who fans' vocabulary needs recognition, which is a very good point. I personally think it's an awesome point. Mark Sharp, Mark of the Rani was great. Time of the Rani is a mess, but only because of the numerous rewrites it went through. And DJ Switchbeats said, that was me scratching, I remember, oh, funny red sound effects. I remember enjoying the Vervoid story when I was a young'un. Same for the last episode of Trial of a Time Lord, which can't have been easy to do. So it's, even though they've had this many, many years of derision in front of them, it's a generalisation, isn't it? It's not the case that everybody absolutely hates them.
Mm.
So let's move backwards in time to The Ultimate Foe, which was the final instalment of the Trial of a Time Lord series. If you're not aware of Trial of a Time Lord, do you know, I dreamt I was in W.H. Smith last night and they had one of those old tins, the Trial of the Time Lord VHS tins, for £5. Yeah. £5, and I bought it. It was a dream, however, so I didn't. There you go. Anyway, so Trial of the Time Lord, The Ultimate Foe, was the final pair of episodes from the OTT season arc from 1986. Now, it was supposed to have been written wholly by Robert Holmes, but sadly he died while working on the script. So only the first episode is credited to Robert Holmes, and the second episode is credited to Pip and Jane Baker. This is the episode that includes things such as the megabyte modem, the Valiard, proving that he is a master not only of disguise, but of escape. Things are set up really well in the first episode. I'm always kind of torn by this story. Guys, help me out here.
Should we help him out?
You know what? He always throws it to me. Maybe I shouldn't help him out.
I didn't throw it to you. I said, guys.
He did, actually. Hey, you've picked it up yourself.
No. He threw that first one to me in the beginning. And every podcast before, don't make out like this is the only time this is happening. All right.
Because I always find that the first one's really good and the second one's not as good. It's a bit of a letdown in the end. But then again, the stakes have been set so high. In many ways, with, you know, you've got the mastering glitz and the tapes from the sleepers have pinched from the Time Lords while they were hiding on Ravalox, which was really Earth. You've got the Valiard disguised as Jeffrey Hughes, disguised as the Valiard. It turns out the Valiard's not even the Valiard, he's the Keeper. What's going on?
In fairness, I would say that I don't think we can necessarily blame Pip and Jane for all of that, because I think we had talked about before in one other podcast with the Trial of a Time Lord that had the bookended aspects of the story actually been one story themselves, you know, had there actually been just a trial story, even if it was just a two-parter, it probably would have all been easier to follow and easier for them to connect the dots to tell a better story. Whereas here, they told it over the course of 14 episodes, at the beginning and the end of each episode, and it really just muddled the waters. And you have to try and remember at episode 14 everything that's come before the entire season. You know, and it's and generally, I mean, TV is kind of done that way nowadays, but we have a better grasp of it and we have a better way of reminding the audience of the important things that had happened. And it didn't do that then. So I think having them pick it up and try and clean it up, you know, having us being the audience trying to follow and connect the dots, and then having them be the writers trying to follow and connect the dots of somebody else's work, is where things fell apart.
James?
I think it's a mess. I think the original concept was a mess. I think, you see, I haven't really looked into The Ultimate Foe enough to really give a fair, considered opinion to anyone who worked on it. Time is a wonderful thing. For you, dear listener, no moments have gone past. For us, there was a bout of internet disconnection, which allowed me to actually read up a little on The Ultimate Foe and revise my answer. Because it is
That's
a hard
cheating.
It is a bit, but then, you know, ain't that what time travelers do? Isn't that what the time champion does? He cheats and messes with time, like me. We're just crazy bros. What I like. What I think is good about The Ultimate Foe is that it is even more of a mishmash of problems to time. My signal just died then.
Yeah.
But that was my router as well, I think.
Yeah, it's weird. Well, Brian's not going to get kicked because he hasn't sworn.
It makes you wonder, doesn't it? It's bloody weird.
Yeah, that was pretty weird.
I want to blame that EE service, because ever since they changed over to EE, my mobile phone connection is terrible. And I'm sure it's somehow affecting my electronic equipment like aliens.
Yeah. Oh, it must be that, yeah.
Must be.
Undoubtedly.
No doubt.
Yeah, yeah. Right, okay, shall we... Pip and Jane Baker.
Pip and fucking Jane Baker.
No, you're going to get kicked again!
You know what? We should talk about how much we hate this podcast more than we hate them. Maybe that will be even better.
Well, this podcast is fucking me off. I think it needs to really sort it.
Well, this podcast has been shafted by Pip and Jane Baker, hasn't it, basically?
It makes you wonder if they have some sort of karmic value.
Or maybe they worked for the Secret Service, and that's why they weren't very good writers.
I don't know.
They're
too
busy spying on John Nathan Turner and his at the lefty BBC. Maybe that's what the Happiness Patrol was all about. Maybe it wasn't an attack on Thatch. Maybe it was an attack on Pip and Jane Baker.
You're going to get us kicked again. Dear listener, we're having a horrible time today. We're being kicked off from various routers as if this subject is one that you just don't talk about. It's taboo. And trying to talk about it is proving bloody
that's
difficult.
That's rule about Pip and Jane Baker. Is you
don't talk about Pip and Jane Baker. Yeah.
So
I'm going to, from here on, call them Tom Baker. Now, this may cause any listener or the singular listener.
What about Colin and Tom Baker?
I did consider, yeah, okay, because there's two of them, yes. Colin and Tom Baker. The problem with Colin and Tom Baker, I mean, they obviously said, John Nathan Turner told them that they only had 3 days to write this because Robert Holmes had fallen ill and... The draft was taken on by Eric Soward, who decided to have a version which John Nathan Turner didn't like because it had the Doctor and the Valiard plunging into nothingness at the end of the episode, which he felt was downbeat and didn't prove that the series was sort of on its back on momentum. And Soward refused to actually change the script. So
having read the rest of them,
and then revoked it just before they went into production. So they only had 3 days to write this. So in fairness for Pip and Jane Baker, or Colin and Tom.
Colin and Tom.
The problem for Colin and Tom Baker was the fact that they'd had this massive soap drama beforehand that they had to take on. So I can sort of understand that. But in the end, it's still a messy episode. I mean, you've got this, the whole thing with Mary.
I don't even know what we're talking about anymore.
Ultimate Foe by Colin and Tom Baker. Come on, keep that up.
How are people supposed to follow this?
Well, they should have been following from the beginning. They'll work it out. God's sake. Readers should be at least vaguely intelligent. He's able to differentiate between Northerner, American, and proper English person. So, you know, I'm sure they can take this on board as well. So, yeah, the problem was is that there's a lot of... Huh?
Are you from the north?
No, you're the northerner.
Oh, right, up and yeah.
Yeah, actually, technically, okay. I was born in the north as well, but let's not go there. What was I saying? Yes, I mean, the whole point, I mean, you've got things like Mel. I mean, Mel suddenly appearing and doesn't have a beginning, which
oh, yeah. No.
That's terrible. Right. You've got, you've got the whole thing. It is messy. You know, the Master, the Valyard in there. There are some good things in there. The Matrix is done quite well. It's done very similar to the Deadly Assassin, and it's quite subversive, and that works well. But it just doesn't hold itself. And I suppose, to be fair, you know, with 3 days, I don't know. Can you really blame them for it? But I don't know. I think to me, what the sourness for Trial of the Time Lord is that very ending. The last 5 minutes is just so weak that it just leaves a bad aftertaste for the whole thing.
We're back into Miracle Day territory here, aren't we?
It is. It's that same thing. You can have a bad beginning, you can have a bad middle, but you can't have a naff ending. And it's the sad thing is that, to be fair, the rest of it, of the Ultimate Foe, doesn't hold up that badly. It's just, you know, given the situation they're in, where they had Master, you know, Mel, Glitz, and all this stuff to juggle around on this ridiculously long story already. But the last, I think, if they'd actually tied up Mel and the Doctor a little better at the very end and chosen not to forget the fact that she was actually from his future, he would have made this... It left the show with too much of a what happened there factor.
Yeah.
And I think if I'm going to have to be cruel to Colin and Tom, you can't ignore that, can you? You can't ignore that in the script as being something which should have been looked at. And I know, yeah, you can say, well, the script editor should have been looking at that, but I don't know. I think that's something I'd have to blame them for.
Well, you know, and it actually comes that they don't really even, you know, they write that last part of the Trial of the Time Lord, and then they write the first episode to come after it, which is Time and the Rani. And, you know, they never even once thought to look at that and address that because, you know, like you said, she's from his future. She was brought to that trial to give testimony on the character of the Doctor, you know, so clearly she's traveled with him and she knew him. And if we're to really follow the storyline properly, then she's already traveled with the Seventh Doctor as well because she's done and gone, you know, and she's with Glitz and whatnot. Well, maybe that's a little different, but the point is that they should never have made them leave together in the end. Like, oh, hey, I guess you're my new companion now, because that's totally just destroying time right there, you know. But and I will say too, like, obviously, I mean, clearly everybody's noticed that, but like, Big Finish has addressed that, and they've made it sound that you know, after the trial, the Doctor just brought her back to her point in time and went on his merry way, knowing that one day he was going to meet her, and would soon enough essentially meet the end of his life, essentially. But that's great and good and fine. The Big Finish can do that. But the TV show needs to keep track of stuff like that. And yeah, they just didn't do this. And when they got to Time and the Rani, they could have said, hey, you know what? We made a mistake. Because like you're saying, that good writing should have, you know, a good beginning, middle, and end. You can't have a bad end, etc. But you need to also know characters, and you need to know where they're coming from and who they are. And I know that they had such a short time doing that, but they didn't evaluate the characters that they had in this particular story, and they let that carry over into Time and the Rani. They just let them continue traveling instead of trying to explain it.
I think that's very true. And I think if you talk about characters as well, it goes totally against the whole point of the Time Lords, who have pulled Colin pulled the Sixth Doctor in for his terrible atrocities over the season to come, and then they let him leave with a massive time paradox on the assumption he might take her back home. It feels a mess, and I agree with you. While, to be fair to them, I can't imagine what bedlam was going on with the production at that time to try and get that through. But you do feel, and I know they might say, well, you're looking at it with 21st century eyes, but I don't think you are. I think all you needed was a couple of lines in there and a better story, but you needed a couple of lines in there in Time and the Rani to just at least make people feel this character has some sort of existence.
Yeah.
Apart from just being a companion, because that's what she ends up just feeling like. She doesn't feel like she's a person that the Doctor's picked up. It just feels like, well, Perry's gone. We need a companion. So here's a companion. And that's it. Problem, you know, solved.
You could have even had those couple of lines in The Ultimate Foe. You could have had, you know, the Doctor just simply, when they say goodbye, you could have had him just say, until we meet again, or until we meet for the first time, or something. Just some kind of line, just stating that, yes, we're parting our separate ways, yes, we're going to meet again. And this way, when you start Time and the Rani, and they are together, you know that they did meet. It's a shame we don't get to see their proper first meeting, but, you know, that's all you needed. In one of those two stories, just a couple lines to explain, you know, yes, we will meet again. You know, or, yeah, I picked you up again after that, you know?
Because it's vaguely insulting, isn't it? Because it almost runs at the time that if the Ultimate Foe seem to think, well, by this point they'll have forgotten that she's from his future.
Yeah.
And we can just let them go off in the TARDIS. So the majority of the audience will just go, oh, yes, that's his companion now, and forget about it. And that seems an insulting way to end. As you say, all you needed was a line as they stepped in the TARDIS, to be fair.
Sure.
And that would have covered it. I mean, for God's sake, he'd actually managed to get an extra 5 minutes or so for that episode, as far as if I remember right reading. So, you know, they could have got one extra line on top.
Yeah, absolutely right. Yeah, it was 5 minutes longer than normal.
So, yeah, I can't totally blame them. But, I mean, should we say that we're not blaming Pip and Jane Wrightbaker's writers, though?
Colin and Tom.
Colin and Tom, thank you. Although Colin and Tom were blamed by Space 1999 fans for the season two episode they did. That wasn't very popular as well. But,
well, I think for The Ultimate Foe, I think you're right. We can't rightly blame them, because like we already established, they were trying to clean up another mess, somebody else's mess, essentially, or trying to pick up, you know, the slack that was not allowed to be aired. You know, so they had to, I shouldn't even say clean up a mess. They just had to fill the final gap of something that they didn't really have a proper stake in.
Okay, let's go TARDIS-like further back in time a few weeks to Terror of the Vervoids, where the Doctor and his new companion that he hasn't yet met, Mel, land on a space liner, which is staffed by various people who can't act very well, and also features some fellow passengers, which includes Pussy Galore from Goldfinger. Fair enough, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I always found the supporting cast quite good in this. And it's also, despite the slightly suggestive nature of the Vervoid's design, which is either a very bad joke or it's purely coincidental, you know, like looking at clouds and seeing shapes in them, or looking at rocks on the moon or Mars and seeing shapes in them, and faces, etc.
Looking at vaginas and seeing Vervoids in them.
What a terrible thought.
One of us is going to drop off again, James.
It is... pretty well cast in terms of the principal supporting cast, I always found. And I always found it, even with the objection, sagacity, etc. bits, I always found it held together quite well.
Yeah. I was always a fan of this particular story, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't the greatest, but I enjoyed it. It had a little bit of a mystery, and I liked that.
Mm.
And it wasn't like the biggest mystery, it wasn't the greatest mystery, but it was a neat way to tell the story. And they did find ways to, like, very, very new series kind of way to dive right in it. You know, people knew the Doctor, so there was no getting to know him or whatever. You know, the captain of the ship is just like, oh, you're here again, you know. And something I would have liked to have learned more about their past type of thing, seen in another story. But it seemed to just kind of get right into the action. As you said, it did have the objections and the interruptions and so on, but it seemed to flow nicely. The suits... I know what you're saying about the suits, but my issue with the suits was always that they kind of looked like they were made more for theater than for TV. But aside from that, I never really had a huge issue with this story.
It's got quite an impressive set as well, obviously, the hydroponics center on there. And although it does suffer from the same as various other stories this season, in that it's overly lit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
James, what do you think of it? Are you...
Yeah, I quite like it. Of the Trial of the Time Lords series, it's the only one I find that is actually popcorn watchable. That you sit down and you can just enjoy the flow of it. The rest are either too dark or slightly clunky, or they just don't carry any pleasure. I mean, Mind Warp's not a bad story in itself, but it suffers from that Colin Baker, I suppose it's Eric Soward really, where it just feels a bit morose and downbeat to the point where, you know, nothing really happens. I mean, I always feel with that story you could sort of break it down far quicker, and it's just a drawn out quite well done. Bit of monotony, really. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. And the same with the Mysterious Planet. It's not a bad idea, but it just it lacks any sort of life to it.
Panache.
I'm not sure if it's panache. It has a bit of style to it, but it just doesn't have any lift. Yeah. You don't want to be there. You don't really care for anyone in particular. I think all the characters are very cold by Colin Baker's era. You don't get any guest stars who are particularly likable. Glitz isn't very likable either. He's likable later on in Dragonfire, but he's not very likable in Mysterious Planet. So Terror of the Vervoids is the only one where I actually sort of quite interested in the people in it, even if they are a bit archetyped. So yeah, I kind of like it. As I say, as a kid, I found them quite scary, the Vervoids. And as an adult, you know, I double take as I look at, as I think one of them on the team described as the labia-like look to their headdress. But they are quite a good threat in an enclosed space. It is overlit, I agree, but in a sense perhaps that's kind of nice, because there was, you know, Mind Warp was quite dark in a lot of ways. It was all caverned, well, some of it was caverned, and I don't mind it. It's still not brilliant Doctor Who, though. Do you know what I mean? It feels like something you would see in the sort of Graham Williams era of Tom Baker. And I'm not talking about Pip Baker when I say that. I'm talking about Tom Baker, the actor. It feels like something from that era.
It's not a million miles away from Nightmare of Eden, is it?
No, well, that's what my brain's thinking. And he would sit in there and you wouldn't think it's an amazing story, but you'd probably quite happily watch it. And I think maybe in Doctor Who, in that era, in the Colin Baker era, it needed a story like that. But I don't feel it's a story that... Again, no offence to Pip and Jane, but it is slightly offensive. I don't feel it's a story that would say the person who write that is a really strong writer. Do you know what I mean? It's not got a... It feels like Doctor Who, but it doesn't feel like it's anything special.
Mm.
But among the sort of very cold characters of the rest of the season and the oppressive nature of the season itself, it's the only breath of fresh air within that season.
Brian?
I've already given my opinions, haven't I? I think it's your turn.
Oh, it's me, is it? Oh, right. Yes. Okay. Well, as I said at the beginning, I do like this the principal support casting. Malcolm Tierney, who's latterly carved a niche as sinister politicians and policemen on television, and other dodgy power craze authority figures. He's very good as Doland. And Honor Blackman. See, Honor Blackman, it's as if she can only play two characters. One of them is the kind of Kathy Gale / Pussy Galore. And the other one is the slightly randy old woman that we saw in...
she can't play two characters. Her life denotes that she can play one character at one specific point in her time. And then later on, she has to go and play another. So she can only play one character.
Okay.
It's a different character at different ages. Is that what you're saying?
Possibly, yes. And here in the Terror of the Vervoids, we're supposed to believe that she is a scientist. A professor, indeed. And I have trouble buying that, to be honest. And then you've got the typical Pip and Jane Bakerisms. You've got Hyperion 3 as the name of the vessel, which I suppose it sounded quite futuristic in 1986, but it doesn't sound particularly futuristic now. It feels a bit cod. I would agree. It is watchable. It's possibly the most watchable one of the serial. And of course you've got Mel's scream at the end of part two.
Is that a pro?
No, I think it is. I think it's cleverly done. I think it's the only time that...
Oh, what you mean where it links into the sting?
Yes, in the same key. That works. And it's probably the only time her screaming does work. But, yeah, largely, it's it's not Pip and Jane Baker's fault, I don't think. I think it's written reasonably well. I just think it's broken up unnecessarily by the trial stuff. And there's a few kind of framing things, you know, like the whole sort of Mel not being the Doctor's companion yet, which we don't need to worry about too much with this, but it throws a bit of confusion into things. And it's got an interesting conclusion. And obviously you've then got the Valiad deciding to suggesting that the charge against the Doctor be increased to genocide, which is very clever. And I think it's the only part of the trial that actually has any real drama to it.
It is. It's I was surprised that the Doctor didn't bring in his witness as being the other Time Lord in Genesis of the Daleks, who's quite happy for him to go and commit genocide on a race. Yeah, you know, obviously different races have different. But yeah, I think. But I mean, is the question here perhaps a better question? Is Pip and Jane Baker, not that they can't write, because I think what we can establish here is they can, and they can write very, they can write structured and in enjoyable shows like Terror of the Vervoids. As I said, Mark Lorani, I still think, has got a lot of stuff going for it. Could you argue that they're perhaps not particularly suitable for Doctor Who? No, that they don't bring anything to Doctor Who particularly. They bring a craft as being a writer, but they don't bring anything which benefits Doctor Who per se. Perhaps that's the problem. And then having them as the premiere for the Seventh Doctor, perhaps that's one of the reasons it feels very weak, because it does feel like... Budget aside, it's a very sort of established way that Pip and Jane Baker work. Especially if you take Time and the Rani and Mark the Rani, you've got those similar parallels in what the Rani's up to.
Well, let's look at it this way, too. We all kind of, out of the four stories that we're talking about here, we all sort of agree Mark of the Rani was the best one.
Yes.
Christian?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Then look at the other stories that we have here. You know, Terror of the Vervoids was set during the trial, and they had to bookend those trial components in there. Okay, so rather than just telling a straight linear kind of story and focusing on that story, they had to focus on time, force, part of the trial. The Ultimate Foe, they had to quickly rewrite a story, or rather quickly come up from a story from scratch to fill the missing gap of the end of that story. And Time and the Rani, as you had said yourself, James, I believe you read that it went through numerous rewrites, you know, for whatever reasoning. Could this be, with the exception of like Mark of the Rani being in Colin's first season, which was still kind of within what I'm going to say here, but could it be more so that they suffered a little bit less by their own writing, but more of the era in which they were asked to write in? Because this was like a huge turmoil era for Doctor Who.
But could you argue that for any of the writers there, do any of the other writers stick out as Pip and Jane Baker have? I mean, again, I suppose we could argue, because this is all flowing off, this is all improvised, we haven't really talked about this before. Could you argue, as we said, is it just Time and the Rani is their problem? Or, devil's advocate, is there anything in any of their episodes which stands out to you as a moment of Doctor Who?
Hmm.
I mean, is that a way of quantifying whether they were good for Doctor Who? Not whether they were good writers, because they were professional writers working to deadlines. And I think if anyone doesn't respect the hardships of doing that, then they too can perhaps piss off, to use another bit of profanity in this podcast, to see if we get closed down. You know, writing, like any job, is a hard thing. It's very easy to say that's crap writing. You go and write and then come back and say it. So let's just say they're established writers, but are they good for Doctor Who? And perhaps that's a quantifier. Is there anything in
there?
Well,
let's have a look at Philip Martin, who was responsible for Mind Warp.
Right.
I believe, and of course he also wrote the serial from, I think it was the previous series? Vengeance on Varus.
Right. Which has got a new lease of love of late, I've noticed.
Hmm. Yeah, I just liked it at the time. I thought it was quite clever at the time.
It was not as bad as I thought it was when I rewatched it a few years ago.
Yeah.
Based on what everyone was saying.
And of course he was the creator of Syl and the Mentors. So I think that's a good comparison, because he's only done two. He should have done three stories. He arrived in Doctor Who at around the same time. He wrote episode serials in both of the same two series as Pip and Jane started in. So he's a good kind of barometer. He's a good control, if you like.
Right.
Did he bring anything new to Doctor Who?
I can't say anything that I don't remember. The only things that stick out of my head for him is obviously is Bird Perry.
Mm-hmm.
And
Bald Perry.
Bald Perry, I suppose. Syl, I mean, I would have to say maybe Syl. But then with Colin and Tom Baker, you've got Rani, which I think she at least had potential, even if she didn't live up to it. But then did they definitely create her? I mean, I know they obviously conceived her for the story. They conceptualized her in the story. But was the premise of the Rani hers, or was that Soward or Turner's? I don't know.
I'd always assumed it was theirs.
I think it probably was. I've not seen anything saying it wasn't. But if it was theirs, the Rani is in their court, as I suppose, as something memorable from Doctor Who, to be fair to them.
And you could definitely say that, you know, at least certainly in my opinion, that they had created a recurring villain for the show, like a very good recurring villain that they could have, you know, cashed in on. They didn't make her just a master copy. You know, they didn't make her insane. They didn't make her, you know, really necessarily out for like world domination. She had schemes of her own to just kind of like further herself as, you know, whatever kind of position she wanted in the galaxy. But she was just a smart, technically, she was probably one of the evil people out there, rather, who wasn't like driven by insanity in some way. You know, she was just doing what she was doing because she was smart and realized that she could make things happen for herself.
Indeed, as James and I discussed a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
there you go.
But devil's advocate, at the same time, did they destroy the master somewhat? Because how he appears in, he's not a very strong character in The Ultimate Foe, and he's certainly a very weak character in Mark of the Rani.
Hmm.
Well, you know, he was kind of, in a sense, he was kind of still true to himself, I feel, because he kind of seemed like how, when he has his evil schemes and so on, he does kind of try to steal the ideas of the Doctor in previous stories. Like when the Doctor wants to try and do something, he's like, oh, well, thanks, you know, I'll take that, you know. But he's got his own evil schemes as well. So maybe he is slightly downplayed in the Mark of the Rani, but he did seem like he just saw, he did what he does. He saw something that was good for him to further his self as the most powerful being in the universe and was going to try and take it for himself. You know, but why sit back and do the work yourself, you know, when you could take it from somebody else? You know, and so was it the best usage of him? Probably not, no. Was it a horrible usage of him? I never really saw it as a horrible use.
Fair enough.
Okay, so let's wrap it up. Pip and Jane Baker, the devilish creators of hellish Doctor Who episodes such as Time of the Rani and The Ultimate Foe, were they really that bad?
No, I don't think so. I think in fairness, having assessed their stuff, there's nothing Terror of the Vervoids and Mark of the Rani is no worse than the stuff that was coming out through the Colin Baker era. I mean, as you say, you look at Philip Martin, you look at Glenn McCoy, you even look at Robert Holmes was delivering. There's nothing there to me personally think really stands out. So in fairness, they were pretty much standard.
So we've been unfairly criticising Pip and Jane Baker for 26 years.
Well, no. Well, Time of the Rani is dreadful. And as I say, the reasons it's dreadful is really to do with the story as much, and script as it is anything else. So the only person I can offset the blame on for them is the commissioning of the script in the first place. So I think they are rightly criticised for that story. But I think also for even there, you've got to blame the production for deciding that's the sort of story that they can kickstart their brand new series with and their brand new Doctor.
Okay. Sounds good to me. And Brian, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think some criticism is fairly due to them, but I don't think all the flack that they get is worth it or warranted.
Well, none of the writers, the flack that they get from Doctor Who fans is worth it in some
That's
cases.
Very true. That's very true.
Okay. You get some disgusting stuff.
So there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Pip and Jane Baker, not actually that bad at all. Who'd have thought it? Until next time, bye-bye.